Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 25th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us once again today to talk about recent events, developments, and technologies in the field of climate change and alternative energy research is Dan DeLurie, Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School and former White House Director of Clean Energy. Dan has over 25 years' experience, including as an executive with utilities and clean energy companies. You want to give us a call? I would say do it now. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also reach out via email, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Dan DeLurie, climate change, green energy, your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, or as Josh would say, rollicking Ray Graff. I've never rollicked in my life. Here to talk climate change and alternative energy is Dan DeLurie, Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School. Over 25 years' experience, including as an exec with utilities and clean energy companies, Dan is the former White House Director of Clean Energy, where he focused on the decarbonization of the nation's electricity system. A UN-accredited delegate head to the UN Climate Change meetings, known as COPs, Dan is considered a pioneer in developing content, policy, and programs that combine climate change with new electricity technologies. You want to talk to him? Hey, feel free. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Dan, do you feel like rollicking at all? Are you in a kind of a...
No, but I'm pleased to be in your presence,
really?
Rollicking Ray.
Yes. Rollicking Ray. Okay, well, there's one name that we have to focus group, because I don't think it's ever going to appear again. Hey, man, how you doing? Did you go to COP30 this year?
I did not. As I may have mentioned on previous shows, I've been to most of the COPs, and as people may know, COP30, the 30 stands for 30 years of these annual
climate
meetings.
How many of the 30 have you been to?
Maybe 20, perhaps, going back to the early days when the COPs were pretty serious matters, where those of us who went, who were non-governmental, went to be able to be advisors to our own country delegation. They would run things by us and ask us, you know, for ideas and thoughts as they negotiated with the other countries.
Well, I'm sure you were following it, though, right, this year?
Sorry?
I'm sure you were following
it. Oh, no, I've followed it, and I can say a couple things about that.
I mean, NPR has been not negative about it, but reporting that there was not a lot accomplished.
There was not. No, there was not. The major COP was COP15 in Paris, and that's where you had the Paris Treaty or Accord, as it's called, and that's when countries agreed to ante up and to make specific pledges as to how much they were going to reduce their emissions. The pledges they made weren't enough to meet the temperature targets, but the thinking was that there was a structure and that the countries would up their pledges over the years. Sadly to say, most countries have not met those pledges. They also did not come up with new plans to submit at COP30 in Belém, which they were supposed to. So, you know, that's not a good sign, obviously, that, you know, countries, I mean, there were some interesting developments. India and China both put forth real plans, robust plans in many ways, and they had not done that before. But overall, I don't know the number, but maybe it was 50 to 60% of the countries.
You know, what I took away was that, well, they said we're going to focus on the removal and the end of fossil fuels.
Correct.
But they didn't really do anything about it.
No, they did not. It's surprising to know that prior to Dubai, which was two COPs ago, and I was at that one, there was no mention ever in the final output of a COP of fossil fuels. And so in Dubai, I forget the exact language, but there was language that everyone agreed to talking about a transition away from fossil fuels. And there was supposed to be more specificity and more agreement in Belém, and it simply didn't happen. The crazy thing about the COP is that it operates on consensus. And you've got, what is it, 185 nations or more, and it just... It doesn't work.
Well, how else could you do it? You have 180 nations. I mean, you have, what, one nation is the grand poobah?
Well, it depends on how you define consensus. And I think some people define it as majority, but the strict definition of consensus is everyone. And that if one party, and party is the UN term for country, when you hear a conference of the parties. So it's the kind of thing where it's just hard to do. And there's, you probably have read this in some of the reports, there's been a lot more participation by fossil fuel interests than there used to be.
Good thing or bad thing?
Well, I'd call it a bad thing from a standpoint of trying to put a provision in the agreement that says we must move away from fossil fuels.
Excuse me. But if you want to move away,
right.
Most of these fossil fuel companies, they also have research in alternative energy, right?
They do.
So don't you want them at the table?
If they're at that part of the table, yes. I mean, a lot of the oil companies were solar pioneers. I mean, we're talking decades ago, but they gave it up. And they simply, and now with favorable policy, again, not to get political, but the U.S. folks that would normally go to a COP were instead traveling around the world trying to talk other countries into importing more U.S. fossil fuel.
The number, by the way, and we will get to your calls after the first break, 800-348-2551 if you want to talk to Dan DeLory. It's climate change and alternative energy with Dan today. Bill Gates sort of walked back some of his... somewhat apocalyptic comments from years ago.
Yeah, this was, it's called the Bill Gates Memo, and it got a lot of media coverage, including in the general media, so a lot of listeners probably saw it. And to sum it up in one particular case, it sort of implied that we're on somewhat of a glide path towards reducing emissions, and therefore we should put more effort and more money into alleviating suffering in the developing world. Now, the reaction of almost everybody in the climate world, particularly climate scientists, was, whoa, you know, we haven't solved this yet. You know, this is all still before us as to where we end up. And we're not on a glide path. Scientists are still in the prediction of 2.5 to 3.0, where we end up in terms of temperature increase. And so, you know, the idea that of climate change and emissions reduction being on some sort of autopilot or glide path is what people reacted to. There were a lot of things in the Gates memo, some of which I agreed with and others agreed with and so on. But the main thing was he was saying, you know, we can, you know, the paradox is that if we don't solve climate change, all of the things he talked about wanting to work on will be worse.
But in Bill Gates' defense, you can work on climate change. What about all those people who are suffering right now?
Well, we have to walk and chew gum at the same time, obviously. I mean, it's tough when things like USAID have been pulled back, where a lot of those types of things were addressed. But it's not really an either-or, but he was making it only one. And I think that's what people reacted to.
The number here is 800-348-2551. We have year-end expiration of home tax credits coming up.
Right. Just quickly, the EV tax credit ended on December 30th. The tax credit for improvements to your home, including things like heat pumps or appliances or solar, rooftop solar for your home, that's good until December 31st. And I know firsthand that a friend of mine in Washington, she just looked into whether it was too late to to have solar companies do something, and she got five bids from solar companies. So if anyone wants to find out more about what you can do before December 31st, go to Energy Sage, S-A-G-E, and that's where you can find out about solar and approved contractors. And then Rewiring America is another website.
And you've talked about that website quite
a bit. I have, and that will tell you more about the incentives for your home, appliances, et cetera.
Dan DeLury is our guest today. Dan, we have about a minute before the break, and then we'll hit the phones after that. You talk about heat pumps, the tax credits for electrifying your heating and cooling. Electricity, it's not that cheap right now.
Right.
So what do you do?
And it's probably going to get more expensive.
Well, what's the incentive?
Well, in terms of what to do, that's one issue, obviously. But I think, you know, it's important to understand what's causing this price rise. And it's neither good nor bad. It's almost kind of just that's the way things work.
Oh, yeah.
Utilities. I mean, all of the listeners are probably customers of a variety of utilities, and their bills are structured in different ways. Your electricity bill, you don't just pay for the power that comes out of the power plant, but you pay for the wires, transmission and distribution. Now, the new wild card is data centers, which, again, has been front page general media news. And the data centers built for AI have been driving up electricity demand. But in order for the data centers to get that electricity, there also has to be investment in the wires. And one recent report showed that it may be the wires as much as the data centers that are causing the prices to go up, because we all pay for the wires.
All right, so we have to take a break. We're overdue. But so it's the data centers and the big companies, but it's not mandates on electrification or government control that is causing the electricity
more than once on the show in past years. I was asked the question, what is electrification, is the grid ready for it? And I said yes, based on the pace that it's happening. But we have to understand data centers has come out of nowhere.
All right, but why would increased demand would cause brownouts or blackouts? Why would that raise rates? I mean, there's only a certain amount of electricity.
That doesn't raise rates. It's what the utilities do to meet that extra demand, which means adding things, adding power plants, adding distribution and transmission.
Okay.
All right, it's a great discussion, but it's kind of a long one.
Okay. And thankfully, we have to take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. Dan DeLury is our guest. We'll be back with your calls in a moment. That's right, Zach. They're saying beef jerky. It's a little-known John Lennon tune from Walls and Bridges here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. I'm not even sure why they did that. They said beef jerky. And Dan DeLury is certainly no jerk, and he's here today. He's talking climate change and alternative energy with you. And let's jump to the phones. 800-348-2551. Peter in East Springfield, New York. Peter, go ahead.
Hi. You're talking about the rates going up and electricity, this and that. I've been following this for a while, and it seems to me that with all the research going into new batteries, and there's two or three different varieties there that should be coming online in the next 5 to 10 years. And I imagine that the cost will be cheaper on some of them than the existing lithium batteries. And it occurs to me that if that happens, for instance, the iron batteries are very heavy. You couldn't put them in a car. It's not practical, but you could put them in your garage. And if somebody had solar or they had wind and they had a stack of batteries in their garage, it seems to me that they might not need the power company. Is it possible that things are headed that way?
Well, it's possible. It's possible now to a certain extent, or to a full extent if you want. I mean, if you add enough storage and you have enough solar capacity or intake, then you could, you know, take a flyer and disconnect from the grid. You couldn't do it without storage. At least I wouldn't recommend that.
Say it again, Peter.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. I get that. But it's just that right now the cost is so high that most people couldn't afford to do it. But it's looks like with the new batteries, I mean, who knows? But it looks like the cost on the batteries is going to come down low enough. And the cost of solar has been dropping steadily for 20 years.
Yeah, no question about the solar. A lot of people, the statistics that I've seen, a lot of people are adding home storage using conventional batteries along with their solar panels. And that's just going to keep
happening. Oh, like lead-acid batteries.
Yeah, basic, yeah, or lithium or something, yeah, uh-huh. But you mentioned iron,
yeah.
And that makes me think of what the real game changer is, and those are utility-scale batteries. Okay, we've now got a lot mm-hmm. of utility-scale solar, which is the cheapest mm-hmm. to add to the grid, which sort of goes back to what I was talking about before the break. It's maybe not the power that is being built and injected into the grid as much as it is having to build the rest of the grid to accommodate it. But utility-scale batteries, including things like iron flow and other types, mm-hmm. That is a real game changer because then you're storing on a massive scale, and that benefits everybody, not just those who have home storage.
Peter, thanks a lot for the call. Carol writes in along the same lines. What are your thoughts about battery storage and the popular opposition to it, such as we're seeing locally in the Hurley-Kingston area, which I'm not sure I know about, but I'll take your word for it, Carol. Isn't battery storage necessary for renewables to be effective, asks Carol. Curious your thoughts on whether further education is needed or if you see things differently. There seems to be a lot of misinformation, and that's from Carol.
Yeah, thanks, Carol. And you've pointed out a lot of different factors in this overall area. And based on what you said, I suspect that the Hurley situation is a utility-scale battery deployment. And so there's folks that are against it, just as they might be against a solar farm or something else. But again, right now, when solar or wind is not available, when there's too much solar in many places like California, it actually gets dumped is the word that they call it. They can't use it. There's not enough storage and there's not enough demand. So they just have to shut it off because they can't do it. They have to shut down wind turbines in some places like that. But right now where there's no storage and where the demand is persistent at a certain period of the day or time, then you use the other plants. You're using your nuclear plants, your natural gas plants, and whatever. But again, as I've often talked about with the benefits of electrification, if more are being added every year, then the grid is getting cleaner every year. But that's where storage is the game changer, utility-scale storage.
Is it demonstrably cleaner now? Is the grid cleaner than it was, say, 5 years ago?
It's cleaner than it was last year.
Do we have numbers?
I mean, I'm sure it exists, but somewhere I have the numbers as to, in fact, I'm going to say that 75% of the new electricity that was added to the grid last year was wind or solar.
Dan DeLore is our guest today, Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School, also former White House Director of Clean Energy. Do you miss D.C.?
Well, that's a difficult question, but I miss doing the work that I was doing, and I wish it had continued because it was focused on allowing more clean energy to be developed. But
every four years there's an election. Maybe you'll get a call.
I love it up here as well, so I love it all.
The number here is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk to Dan DeLore. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. How many years have you been coming on this show now?
I don't know, at least three. I think the first was COVID, actually.
Yeah, so four or five now.
Could be.
You know, I was thinking about this earlier, one thing that has been sort of remarkable is sort of a general move, spiritually or intellectually anyway, toward acceptance of nuclear power.
Yeah.
And do you think, now we saw, was it Microsoft? Somebody wants to restart the nuke plant down in Pennsylvania. Do you think this can be ramped up quick enough to show real savings and maybe get jump start what you want to see, which is electrification of everything.
Yeah, as I've talked about many times on the show or on many shows, is that I am in support of nuclear because of its zero emissions characteristics. And so what we're seeing now are the restart of nukes like Three Mile Island and others.
That's the one. I couldn't remember the name.
So
Nine Mile, Three Mile. Yeah, that's right.
So those are being restarted, and that can be done fairly quickly, I guess one could say. Building a new nuclear power plant is still a multi-year endeavor. The first new one, if I've got this right, was just started in Wyoming. Just, I think, in the past couple of weeks, they broke ground, and it's still developing. What is still not out there are the small modular reactors.
That's an interesting possibility.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things that's right around the corner, it's right around the corner, it's right around the corner. And there are some contracts now that have been let to companies, and some of the data center folks are counting on them. But it's not like they're proven yet, and it's not like the costs are that competitive yet.
Dan DeLorey's our guest, 800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org. Catherine writes in, can you please restate the website for the government refund? I put heat pump splitters in this year, and I'd like to know. And that's from Catherine.
Okay, Catherine. You want to go to Rewiring, R-E-W-I-R-I-N-G, okay, America, all one word, dot, it must be .org, but if you just put in those words. But always with information about, because those are the federal rebates, and I think it will tell you about your state there as well. But you can always go to your state energy office or Department of Energy as well, depending on what state you live in.
We'll go back to the phones in a minute. This one's from JF. Occasionally, I get an offer to get our electricity from a renewable resource, though delivered by our traditional supplier. How does this work? It doesn't make sense to me that the regular supplier would give up any revenue. And that's from JF.
So I think what Jay is talking about there is green pricing or green power, where it's almost like it's a different rate or price plan that your utility offers. And if you choose that, your money is going towards somewhere on the grid creating a new green energy resource.
And how do you know they're actually doing that?
Well, that's covered by regulation, and the regulators review all that and so on. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, utilities buy a lot of power from other places. In the Northeast, there's a lot purchased from Canada. You know, hydropower, and they just, I guess, finished a new line in Maine to bring more hydropower into New England. But, you know, that's something that utilities do, and they don't, utilities make their money, traditional utilities, because there are energy providers out there, but traditional utilities make their money based on their capital investments. So if they're not, if they're not selling power from their own power plant, they're not making as much money. They make it based on a rate of return on their investments, the wires, and the plants.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Dan DeLorey is here, Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School. And, well, he was in D.C. for a time as White House Director of Clean Energy. You never know. Couple few years, the phone's going to ring, and then it'll be back down there, and it'll be tough to get on the program. Max is in Kingston. Max, you're on.
Hey there. It seems to me like climate change and energy policy always sort of run second or third or fourth or fifth as a political issue, even though the technology has advanced, and now its renewables are often, you know, the cheapest option. I wonder where the sort of public clamor for that better option is now that the technology is advanced, but the policy seems to be pushing in the opposite direction to protect energy companies and fossil fuels. So what is it about the messaging that doesn't get to people, or how could people come to realize that they have a better option and demand it?
Well, shall we devote the rest of the show, Ray, to that?
I don't know. If you are, I'm just going to go out and have a drink.
No. But, I mean, that's a great question, Max, and it's multifaceted. Until a year ago, policy was focused on developing more energy efficiency, solar, wind, etc. A lot of that stimulated by the Inflation Reduction Act of the previous administration. So, you know, federal policy has changed completely. But the other part of your question is, where's the clamor? And, you know, why isn't there more of a drive for this based on, and I think this is what you meant, by people's comprehension of how bad climate change may be or how serious an issue it is. And there's all sorts of research and work that's been done on messaging and how you get people to focus on climate change and take it seriously. I'm not sure that nut's been cracked. But it also, as I say that, what has been proven is that different people respond to different messages. So audience segmentation is important. But yeah, if there was a greater connect the dots awareness on the part of people, I think that they would not be so nonchalant about the fact that we're keeping coal plants open and we're adding more natural gas plants to the system.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's WAMC.org, and you can email us at voxpop@WAMC.org. Don't worry, Dan. The phone system is a little funky, but we still can get callers. And let's go to
Doris. This is not from your vacation? What I'm seeing on the screen?
What vacation are you referring to? I don't know, man. Dorothy in Greenfield Center, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. For residential customers, what's the best way to get impartial advice about the best options for backup during power outages? It seems that everyone I look at is either is selling one product or another, and I'm not sure that'll help me fairly compare options.
I mentioned earlier this nonprofit organization called Energy Sage, all one word, Energy, S-A-G-E. Now, I don't know if they do storage, which is pretty much what you're referring
right.
to, I think, during the outage.
Yes.
But let me tell you what they do on solar. You tell them about yourself, and they are neutral. They are your advisor, and they put your house out to all of their approved contractors, and they, using Google Earth, they take a photo of your house and figure out how many panels they can fit on your house, and they make a bid to you. And you have this advisor on your side to talk about the bids and so on. I'm hoping that they do storage also, as I tell you about this. But
you
I
want
don't...
that too, right? That's what I want. I
yeah.
want. I want
but
to
I
get
don't...
off the darn
that's
grid.
That's something I'm particularly interested
yeah,
in.
But
yeah,
but I don't know for sure that they do storage. But once again, I would say, what state do you live in? I'm sorry, you're in Greenfield. You're in Massachusetts.
New York State, Saratoga County.
Oh, you're in
no,
Saratoga.
Saratoga
okay.
County.
So,
yeah.
as you probably know, NYSERDA, N-Y-S-E-R-D-A, is the state government agency
right.
that has contractor lists and has people that will, you know, give some sort of advice. I don't think they have anything like I just described, but, you know, that's still like kind of the only neutral place that I'm aware of like that, which is what you're looking for, I think. You're looking for neutral advice and handholding.
Well, I want to be able to compare. I don't think a generator is right for us, and I'm not wild about a generator. But I would like to compare solar options, generator, and Powerwall kind of battery backup options. And I just don't know where to begin finding someone who can give us personalized advice about
that's
that.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. How do I get? Dorothy's, is it Dorothy?
Well, listen, this isn't,
yes.
Dorothy, why don't you send us an email at voxpop@wamc.org, and I'll put you in touch with Dan, okay?
Yeah, I can't say I can, but I mean, I feel like that's something I should be able to help people with, and I'm just not coming up
right.
with anything specific other than what I said.
All right, fair enough. Thanks for the call, Dorothy. I appreciate it. Susan is in Rhinebeck. Susan, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I would like to ask Dan and what do you think about the safety of nuclear? Would you want to live next to a nuclear plant?
Okay. If you'll allow me 30
given the limitations of the storage, we know that the storage we put in 50, 70 years ago is already into the ground because the storage only lasted for 50 years.
Right. If you'll allow me.
So what about this?
All right, hang on, Susan.
Okay.
Let him speak.
Yeah. But also.
Great. Thank you.
If you'll allow me, Susan, just on that last call, let me give you my email address, which is also what you use if you want to be on my newsletter, okay? And that's delurydan@gmail.com.
You better spell Delury.
D-E-L-U-R-E-Y.
Okay.
Okay, back to nuclear.
Right, and we have to take a break here in a minute,
okay.
So do your thing.
So we need a nuclear depository. We don't have one, a centralized depository. All of the nuclear fuel is being stored on site where the plants are. So I suspect that no one would like having a nuclear plant right next door, just as they don't like anything else next door these days. The thing about nuclear is that it is emissions-free. And if emissions is the currency of how we're going to address the future climate, then nuclear has to be given a fair shake. And it can't be just ruled out. And as I've said on many shows before, I think it's easier to solve the nuclear waste problem politically and technically than to try and reduce emissions from billions of sources all around the globe. So I take sort of a practical approach to that.
Okay, we have to take a break. We're overdue. Thanks for the call, Susan. 800-348-2551 is the number. WAMC is our website. VoxPop@WAMC.org is the email. We'll be back. I'm sorry, Zach. I've been playing Henry Mancini now for some time, and you're okay with that. All right, fine. There you go. I like the Henry Mancini myself. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dan, right before we got back on the air, you were going to say something. As long as you're not going to swear, you can say it on the air.
Oh, I don't remember what it
really?
Was.
Really?
Well, I talked about my newsletter. I just mentioned that.
Oh, no, okay. Just now. Just you were about to say something, and then we went back on.
Sorry, I do not
Are you
remember.
As senile as I am?
No,
this is
I'm
not good, okay? All right, 800-348-2551. Yes, here we go. Let's see. Okay, we have an email here. So, you know, we our phones are working. The screen is not. So don't worry about it. Just don't panic.
I'll take anything.
A couple emails here. John in the 817. I doubt that, but you never know. Storage is mentioned a lot today. Can Dan speak about the value of using the ground as the biggest energy storage battery in existence? And ground source heat pumps take advantage of this battery to reduce energy demand. Do you want to speak about that?
Sure. I mean, geothermal is one of my favorite energy resources, and it's one that has been given short shrift a little bit. In a strange twist of fate, geothermal is more accessible as a resource now because of fracking technology. Because geothermal is all about drilling, as in, you know, that's why it falls under the rubric of drill, baby, drill. It's probably the only
one of your favorite phrases. Ah, there you go.
But so using new drilling techniques, from what the geothermal people tell me, you can basically get geothermal anywhere now because you don't have to go straight down. You can go diagonally and find different hot spots and so on. So geothermal heat pumps are real. They're expensive. And remember, in anything that you're putting on your house, whether it's solar or storage or whatever, I mean, if you've got a small bill, then it may not make sense. Remember, you've got to do that economic calculation. As much as I would like to see solar on every rooftop, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit on my roof.
It wouldn't fit on mine.
And there's all sorts of economic calculations that you have to do. But geothermal is now available in terms, I just saw this article about how they're using it for major, major big residential facilities and so on.
Huh.
So it's basically a source of heat, and that heat, just as if you were burning natural gas, is turning a turbine and producing electricity.
Oh, be darned. Dan Delury is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gina writes in, can you give me the name of an impartial entity that Dan mentioned with regard to evaluating house for solar?
Okay, once again, it's Energy Sage, S-A-G-E, all one word.
Okay, fair enough. And let's go back to our phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Brea and Troy. Hello, Brea.
It's Drea, but
oh.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hello. I went through quite a process trying to get rid of my natural gas boiler and get electric heat pumps installed instead. I was looking at it from August 2022 when the IRA was originally passed, and I tried literally for years to find information and contractors who were able to use the IRA incentives to install a heat pump system. I could find no one. Finally, this year, so it's 3 years after the act was passed, one contractor said, don't bother with the IRA. They still don't have their act together. Use the New York State incentives instead. So that's what I did, and I now have a heat pump system.
How do you like them?
I like it. It took a little getting used to. The thermostats are very different than the old programmable thermostats, but they're I'm actually cleaning the house today, and I'm so warm I'm sweating.
Oh,
so,
okay, good for you.
Yeah,
they're working pretty good.
I'm surprised, Drea, that about what you're saying about having difficulty finding companies. As it happens, I just earlier this year, I did a heat pump water heater in my house. And last year, mm-hmm. I replaced an old oil furnace with three mini splits. And I just, you know, there were plenty of companies that came up on it. I live in Vermont, and so the organization Efficiency Vermont had a list of people, contractors that I could call, and I got both the Vermont incentive and the federal incentive.
Uh-huh.
So, but I'm glad you have them. I'm sorry you went through, you know, more trouble than I'm used to hearing about. But
yeah, I think part of it is that when you are completely decommissioning your gas, so my gas is gone. I have no gas appliances, nothing left. And so you go for like a higher level of incentives. They were just not. Nobody knew anything about them. And I talked to NYSERDA. I talked to Nat Grid. It was really, really difficult. And finally, this contractor said, don't bother. Because, of course, by then Trump was elected. And I was thinking, okay, well, all incentives are going to go down the drain. So I used the New York State incentives.
Okay.
And it was worth it.
And you did it this year or last year?
I'd been looking since 2022,
okay.
And so I first talked to the contractor about a year ago, and
yeah, gotcha.
He put in the system over the summer.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for the call. Now, Dan, do you still have backup heat? I mean,
no.
You're in Vermont. You
have no
three
backup heat.
Split.
I have no heat on my second floor.
Three mini, but what do you have on your first floor?
I have three mini splits.
And that's it.
I mean, my house was built in 1870.
So you have a grate going from the downstairs
to the
upstairs?
I have a couple of those,
yeah.
But, you know, I believe in that you heat the rooms that you live in.
Right. So you don't live upstairs?
I don't. And I'm a cool sleeper. And so, you know, and with mini splits, you can make one room or one zone hotter than the others. And
yeah.
So I'm real happy with them. Once they balance when you turn them on or change the temperature, you know, there's a lot of airflow. But once they're balanced, you don't notice them.
All right. Let's go back to the phone lines with Dan DeLurie, 800-348-2551. We have a full bank of calls, and they all show the same length of time that they've been on hold.
And I think we've set a record for the ones we've taken so far today. This has been quite
all right, let's go to Susan. I think, according to Ed Rosen, Susan's been waiting longest. Susan and Lennox, you're on.
Hello. And start off by thanking you, Dan, for all the work that you're doing for climate change.
Oh, well, thank you.
I've heard about balcony solar, also called plug-in solar. And it's popular in Europe, particularly Germany.
Right.
And in the United States, Utah is the only state that has legalized it, and that's within this past year. So my question is, the panels have to be approved by the underwriter lab and comply with specs. Are there any manufacturers that are supplying these yet? Are they available?
Susan, you and I know about the same amount. Maybe you know more. I was not aware of Balcony Solar until I started seeing the general media and some of the trade media that I read about Germany, where they're selling like hotcakes and they're hanging off every balcony. And then also this is part of the phenomenon in Pakistan, which has been cited a few times as, you know, like going solar overnight with cheap panels from China and so on. But I would not know where to buy one without looking into it myself. The UL approval, I think that's...
So there's currently only that state of Utah that allows them, but there are bills in other states currently.
Yes.
Or after January when the new sessions start. So I'm sure that there is going to be demand for it. I just don't know whether there's anybody is supplying it yet. We can't use the ones that come from Germany.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's on my radar screen, and I want to know, you know, more about this. For instance, I don't even know, and maybe I can find that out somewhere, but I don't know how much power they can supply based on how big they are and the efficiency of the units.
I think it's 1.5 watts.
Well, that's not a lot of watts.
No, I
may be way off on that.
I think you mean kilowatts.
There is a limit, and it's low.
Yeah.
But that's okay because it allows people who can't or don't want to, for some reason, put solar on their roof.
Exactly.
They can put it on their balcony. So that applies mainly to people who rent.
Homes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Susan, thanks for bringing that up on a call because, I mean, I think that's an indicator that there are a lot of people working on, you know, new technologies or new applications of old technology. And, you know, there's not going to be a silver bullet to reduce emissions and solve climate change. So thanks a lot for that call.
Susan, appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Eli in Simsbury, Connecticut. Eli, you're on with Dan DeLore.
Yes, getting back to heat pumps, would propane gas be a viable alternative to electricity powering a heat pump? And still, would it also be more economical to have, say, a pellet stove or a oil furnace as a backup or an addition to it?
Okay, several things here. I mean, people are not necessarily tearing out their old furnaces, whether they're oil or gas, and so they are available as a backup. In my case, it just crapped out. I mean, I didn't have a choice, and so I have no backup because I'm not going to get anything new.
Right. You could get on demand, right? Leave your radiators and get on demand.
Well, you know, actually, back to my one warm room, difficult for me to say sometimes, but, you know, I also have portable heaters, like that I might use under my desk in one room.
Nuclear?
No, they're not.
Okay.
All right. But anyway, a pellet stove. I mean, that gets back to the calculation for the economics of what you're going to do. Because if you're getting heat from a pellet stove, then that reduces your need from heat from your heat pump, and therefore it may make the heat pump economics worse than if you didn't have the pellet stove.
Make it worse or better?
No, make it worse because you don't need the heat pump as much if you've got the pellet stove. Or maybe I misunderstood. Unless you're talking about it as a backup. I thought you were talking about
as a backup.
Oh, sure. That's different. Okay, sorry. And the first thing you said was propane. And I'm not sure I can answer that in terms of using propane to... you've got to use electricity.
Natural gas.
But you've got to use electricity to power the heat pump.
Well,
You can't power it with propane.
I think he knows that, right, Eli? You know that.
I mean, it's an air conditioner, basically, so you have to...
Unless you have your own generator.
Yeah.
Then you could do that.
Yeah, that's right.
But... All right, we only have 2 minutes left. Thanks for the call. I appreciate
Thanks, Eli.
Here's a comment from Connecticut. This is from Martha. The air in Connecticut is worse for numerous criteria, including ozone smog. Our state has added thousands of megawatts of new methane-powered energy pipelines and compressor stations. So even when transportation emissions declined last year, our emissions from energy generation increased. I agree with Dan's points, but we have to stop the fracked methane expansion, which is subverting the conversion to renewables, storage, and deficiencies, and poisoning the air, says Martha. My second point is that lowering emissions is not the only issue. Half of Americans struggle with their utility bill. Nuclear is the most expensive power. New solar is the cheapest. We can't be elitist if we're going to save this earth. And that's from Martha.
Wow.
You have 40 seconds. All right.
There's a lot in there, Martha. Yeah. First of all, you mentioned methane, and methane is sort of the secret problem. Not so secret anymore, but methane has about half as much CO2, but it has... sorry, wait a minute. I'm getting confused in answering this question.
You know why? Because you have yourself on camera. You have your iPhone, and you're looking at yourself, and you're throwing yourself off.
Ray's giving away the fact that I'm taping myself to try and have some film on me doing this. But anyway, so methane is when you add the potency of methane— natural gas is not as good as it was originally talked about as a bridge to the future. So you're right about that. But remember, there are different things in the air, and CO2 and methane are greenhouse gases. Ozone is really not. And, you know, SO2, sulfur dioxide, nitrous dioxide, there are other pollutants that have long been addressed by the Clean Air Act and other things like that. So when you talk about the quality of the air, of air in a particular place, it's important to, you know, to differentiate a little bit on that. And I may not have answered all parts of your questions,
man,
there,
you're
Martha.
Just ramping up. But unfortunately, Count Basie is playing now, and so we have to shut up. Hey, Dan, great job. We will see you in the new year.
All right.
I hope you don't freeze up there with just those three mini splits up in Vermont. It's going to be cold.
I'll let you know.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you ever just go out and get a bear pelt and wear that around the house?
Well, you know, up in Vermont, as you've probably heard, there's no such thing as cold weather. There's just bad clothing.
Oh, I never heard that. I like that. Support comes from Bonham & Douglas Architects, an architecture and interior design studio designing renovations of historic landmarks, including the Music Theater in Northampton, Massachusetts, bd-arc.com. And Rhinebeck Artist Shops, offering fine artist materials and custom picture framing in Rhinebeck at New Paltz, serving the Hudson Valley for over 45 years. HudsonValleyArtistShops.com. Well, thanks again to Dan DeLurie of Vermont Law and Graduate School for being here. This was fun. It always is fun when Dan is here, and he'll be on the schedule next year. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who presumably will also be on the schedule. Good job engineering in there. Lightning Eddie Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's the Science Forum, and then we'll break for a couple of days. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.